Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Right. Atlanta at home because I just don't believe in Dallas. Two games in a row. They do this, then, you know, maybe they can make their run to win the NFC.
No. The Redskins are going to win it. They're two games up in a bad division in a sinkhole. They're going to win it.
Well, the Giants did win the other night.
The Giants are terrible. The Minnesota. Minnesota, supposed to be a very good to great team this year. Hasn't shown that yet. Again, Chuck, are you going to – it sounds like Larry King on the other side here.
No. Go to Duke.
Yeah.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All right, so we got a lot of paperwork to get through. We're in Chicago, of all places.
Yeah.
Wilbon dragged me to Chicago. He didn't actually physically drag me. He said, why don't you take your own plane? I don't want to sit near you because I know how many Xanax you have to take to get here. And I actually got here. And the reason that we are in Chicago, ostensibly, actually it was to have dinner last night, but it was ostensibly because tonight we're going to broadcast, we're going to be the color people on the Binghamton Northwestern basketball tilt. The latest line, I believe, is Binghamton plus 37.5.
I actually checked it this morning. It's 21 plus 21.5.
I would get down on Northwestern immediately on that if I could. So I said, well, let's do the podcast. And Wilbon said, sure, I'll do the podcast. I said, can you get Tommy Waddle? Because I think he's great. And so he said, yeah, I think I can get him. So we got Tommy here. Wilbon is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is running the board. And we're going to do like a not the normal podcast that we do. We're going to do that. The first thing I need to get to is it's colder in Chicago than it is in Washington.
No.
We didn't think. Well, okay. So when we first made the idea for the trip, Michael said to me, the advanced forecast, and I believe this was in July, he said, the advanced forecast, maybe we could play golf. And I said, maybe we could play around 50. And he said, it looks like it could be around the 50s. It's about 26 at the moment. So we're not going to play golf. So I bring out a regular coat. I bring out the coat that I have because in Washington, D.C., there are 10 days maybe in a regular year where it's in the 20s, maybe 10 days, maybe 4 or 5 days will even get into the single digits. But I've got what I need. Wilbon gives me a coat yesterday. Talk about the coat. It's Canada Goose coat.
Well, I was stunned you even knew Canada Goose because it's
right
not,
back here, right?
It's everywhere now. It's everywhere. Washington.
There's a whole store. I am trolling for a free Canada Goose coat right now. Go ahead, talk about it.
You got a free one.
No, so you know it zips on the other side. It's the European. So I think it's probably made. I don't know where it's made. I don't think it's made in America.
I didn't even notice that.
Because why would you zip when you have people to zip for you?
No, I don't have anybody to zip for me. But
is it purple?
It's not purple.
It's blue.
It's
blue.
The classic. It's the midnight blue. Bear blue, Tommy, which you're familiar with. It's not that cold here. This is a nice. Tommy's from the Midwesterner.
It gets cold.
But we're not. It's
colder now than it usually is. It's like 20 degrees below normal at this point.
It's usually you're in the upper 40s.
So
or
what I said to Mike, and my son can bear this out, by the way, we're having this discussion on the cab ride going over here. I'm talking about a Canada Goose coat, and I'm saying, you know, Mike said there was this other brand. It sounded maybe Montclair or Mont something.
Monsanto.
And, no, wasn't. What is it? What is
Montclair, you got it right.
And the cab driver says, oh, your friend is fashionable. He is fashionable. He knows all the expensive things. And I said, yes, he does. So about 2 years ago, I was walking in New York City, and I noticed, like, every five people, somebody would be wearing this monochromatic dark blue coat with an insignia on the sleeve. I thought it was the left sleeve that was red and white and circular that I thought, well, that's weird. What are they? Are they all candy stripers? I mean, because I couldn't make, as they walked by me, I couldn't make out what it was. And then I went into one of Wilbon's fancy stores, Ferragamo, and I asked the guy there, and he said, oh, that's Canada Goose. That's Canada Goose. I said, what? And I didn't know what it was. And he said, these are the warmest coats anywhere. And, of course, you had already had two of these coats. Yeah, and so because Chicago, unlike Washington, Chicago's got 50 days a year where you need a coat, right?
At least a real coat. I'd say 100.
Yeah. 100 days.
Sure. It's a third of the year.
Yeah.
You need, you can wear, you have different weights of it, but I don't ever have a coat on in May in Washington. May here is, the first 15 days of May are often winter.
I don't know what months are more depressing. It could be December and January because it will get really, really cold. But then in March and April, when you're expecting spring to be here and it's not here, you're pissed, to say the least, and it makes it really difficult.
So you've chosen to live your life here. Mike is born here and loves Chicago, but you went to school at BC,
yes,
and then played for the Bears, yep, and said, this is where I want to live forever, even though it's cold?
I love this town. And the older, right, I get, I'm 51 now, the older I get.
51, you know how far, yeah, back in the mirror 51 is? I mean, please, stop, you're a kid.
Listen, I'm 51 chronologically, but my body tells me I'm closer to the century mark. Yeah, I mean, this is, I would say six and a half months a year, there's no better town in the country. I mean, it's fantastic. There's a couple of months where you're on the edge of being happy or sad, and then there's several months where you just want to never come out
April,
of your
May.
House.
April, May for me. It's not the December, January, February.
Because in Washington, April, you're playing golf, yeah, all the, yeah, time. And here you don't.
In April, you're going to see snow three or four times.
Yeah.
It's not Buffalo. It doesn't mean it accumulates.
We still have temporary greens in April.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so maybe May.
I forgot about that.
So tell the people that you do a daily radio show.
Yes.
Now.
First of all, thank you for having me.
It's my great pleasure.
It's my honor. I'm flattered that you invited me. 2 to 6 every day on ESPN 1000, Waddle and Sylvie show. And we've been doing it now almost 12 years.
And Mike does that once a week with
every
you?
Every Wednesday, 5 o'clock, Mike joins us. Yesterday, because of scheduling problems or different issues that he had come up, he actually came in studio and was with us for a full hour. And he was on fire, which was fantastic for us.
So what I want to say, because the interesting thing to me is that we are doing this show, and I want to be, it's not that I want to be honest, I want to give people plugs. We're doing this show in the building that houses 670 The Score. And The Score and ESPN, I assume, are rivals.
Bitter rivals. This is Anchor. This is radio version of Anchorman right now.
That's great.
I brought a trident with me, and I had it in my jacket. Yeah. So, yeah. No, I mean, there's like anything, there's a mutual respect, but certainly there's a competition.
So everybody who's an athlete, and you played for the Bears for how many years?
6 years. I was here from 89. I retired in 95 from the Bengals.
So you played. Everybody who's an athlete has an opportunity to at some point go on television or radio. Everybody has that opportunity. Many people do it for a short amount of time because either they realize or somebody else realizes, this is not for him. This is not for him. You've been doing this a long time. How did you know it was for you?
You know, it's interesting. I have a finance degree from BC. So my plan was I was going to get cut, and then I was going to get cut again, and I wasn't going to make it in the National Football League, and I was going to go to Wall Street. And that was my plan. But after being cut three or four times by Mike Ditka, he finally decided, because there was nobody else healthy, he was going to give me a shot. And things worked out for a while. I was doing a Sunday night's recap show for the last 2 years I was playing in 93 and 94.
As an active player.
Okay. And I was doing on my
that
final year.
That is the
year.
Josh Norman dream.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I don't know if I was as outspoken or revealing as Josh Norman would be, but yes, I did it for 2 years. And then I did a Monday night radio show as well. So I was doing a radio show and a television hit every week my final couple of years in the business. And I enjoyed it. So it was an easy segue for me to go straight from playing into the radio and television business.
How were you teammates with – I've often wondered about this. Did you feel I can't really be as honest as I want to be because I'm on a team, because I have teammates? Were your teammates jealous of you? Were they resentful of you? Did they not trust you? Like when they were around you, did they have to say, hey, Tommy, hey, this is not for air?
No, I would never sell our secrets. There was no doubt. I mean, I probably didn't give you anything that was worth talking about because, you know, it was ingrained in us. I played for Ditka for 4 years and then Wanstead for the final two. But, I mean, obviously the last thing I was going to do was say something that I had to go back on Monday or Tuesday and explain to Mike Ditka. That just wasn't going to happen. But, no, I think that you would talk, you would discuss a game, but you weren't selling secrets. So there was no – listen, back then, too, everyone had a show. I mean, in Chicago – We were on the back end of all of the success of the 85 team and all of
those. It's the greatest team.
Oh, it was fantastic.
It's the greatest team.
And I was unfortunate that I didn't get here until 89. So I miss Walter. Walter retired in 87.
We talked about this yesterday. Yeah. He has the Peyton stories Walter Peyton was the last athlete I idolized, and then I got to know him and cover him, which is sort of weird.
Yeah.
But yesterday, you still, and he has been gone now since 1999.
Oh, so yeah, it's hard to believe.
I just said to him yesterday, what was it like when Peyton would come around? Because Walter was around.
Oh, he was always there. I mean, I got here in 89, and I was the 53rd guy on the roster. I was on the practice squad for the first 10 weeks of the season. But Walter would be around the facility a couple days a week and certainly be there on game day. And Walter would treat you, he may not have even known your name, but he treated you no different than he would treat some of the stars on the team, which was, I mean, for a young kid who was living a dream, just being on an NFL team, to have Walter Payton put his hand on your shoulder and realize that maybe things weren't going your way and give you a little bit of a boost was fantastic.
Mike tells me this all the time, that there wasn't a single guy basically in Chicago who didn't have his own show.
Oh, everybody had everything. And like I'm saying, like, you know, I caught the tail end of you know, Matt Sui, played with him for a year. Jimbo Covert, Tom Thayer,
Richard
Dent was here for Mike Singletary, Steve McMichael. Steve McMichael had a show with the NBC affiliate with Mark Giangreco.
He needed a censor.
Oh, and my
God. It was
gosh.
The greatest thing on Sunday night.
Yeah.
They bring in fake blood. There were weapons involved. I mean, there was all kinds
of
crazy things.
The greatest Sunday night sports thing ever.
Right. Yeah.
So, because in Washington, I don't know that everybody had a show, but what I always admired about Theismann is smart and planned his career very, very specifically. If Joe knew that he was going to do two or three different hits on television on a given night, he brought two and three different outfits. He did that. I mean, he was – everything was so smartly done. And Theismann – and I think most athletes are like this. I do. But Theismann was this to an extreme. I mean, Theismann would be more on time, and by on time I mean early, than Tom Coughlin.
Wow.
And Tom Coughlin was notorious for Coughlin time was 15 minutes before I said we're supposed to be here. Joe was always prepared, always ready. Did you wing it? Did you prepare it? When did you say to yourself, you know what? I could actually have a career doing this.
Half the time I was coming from Planet Hollywood, which was where our team would gather after games to kind of celebrate or commiserate.
Right.
So there were a couple of times where I don't really remember what I was talking about. One time I wore P.T. Willis, who was one of our backup quarterbacks. I wore his wife's hat on set at Channel 2 to do the hit. And it was something that I regretted. This is the way I approach it, though. I knew that I was going to have to work when my career was over. I mean, every year I was clinging to a spot. Things got a little bit easier for me after a period of years where I established myself, and I ultimately started for 3 years in the league, which is crazy to believe. But I knew I was going to have to work. I played 6 years in the NFL and made $1.4 million total, which was great. I mean, it gave me a great head start in life, but it wasn't going to hold me over.
No, no.
So I realized that I had to have a good relationship with the media, or it would be to my benefit. If I could project this image that I was a really good guy, a hard worker, an honest, reliable person, I knew that that would pay dividends for me. And it wasn't an act for me. Hopefully, you know, some people feel that that's my true personality. But I realized that it was going to be a vehicle for me when I knew that I enjoyed the media portion of it. So, you know, I developed relationships with Dan Pompey and Fred Mitchell and you know, Johnny Morris, who was a TV guy.
And these are all the important anchors in Chicago.
And riders, and anchors. Yeah, so
you have not to this day, with your finance degree from BC, you have not to this day tread any water in that.
No, not one day. I went directly from playing into a career in radio and television. So, I mean, I've been tremendously blessed.
It's good.
And we were talking a little bit earlier. I mean, this isn't the easiest profession in the world. I mean, when the light goes on, like 4 hours a day, you got
to
have something to say. But with that said, I'm not outside digging ditches in 20 degree weather. So I am tremendously appreciative for
the career. There are two kinds of people in terms of work. There are people who need Canada Goose because they're outside working.
Right.
And there are people like us who just have Canada Goose.
Amen to that.
All right, we will take a break. That's Tommy Waddle, boys and girls. He'll be here for the entire podcast, however long it lasts. It's going to last at least a few more segments. And we'll be back and we'll just chat more and bring Mike in because Mike picked a nice place for dinner last night. Ooh, and it's Mike's birthday weekend. If the people out there want to show some appreciation for Wilbon. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Okay, this is the Quip ad. That's the toothbrush ad. I didn't bring it with me. Michael, you have to.
This was your chance.
I know. You have to make sure that I use, because I want to fall in love with the Quip. I do. But I probably have to use it first. It's beautiful. It's sitting in the bathroom in my house. I haven't used it yet. I've used regular toothbrushes to this point. One of the most important things we do for our health every day is brush our teeth, yet most of us don't do it properly. Quip is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers. Quip was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and even enjoyable. I'm just going to go off script for a second because I have trouble. I'm a public school guy. You guys are private school guys. I have trouble understanding how Quip can be an electric toothbrush when it doesn't actually plug into anything when it's battery powered. Did you know, for example, that things can be electric and not be plugged in?
I did not know that.
So
no,
you're with
I
me
did
on
not
this.
Know that, yes.
I'm looking for the plug on Quip because it's battery operated. They claim it's electric. It has sensitive sonic vibrations that are gentle enough on your sensitive gums because people brush too hard and some electric toothbrushes are too abrasive. It's got a built-in 2-minute timer which pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides, which helps you guide a full and even clean because 90% of us don't brush for a full 2 minutes or don't clean evenly. It's got a multi-use cover which mounts to your mirror and unmounts to slide over your bristles for on-the-go brushing, which I could have done because I'm actually on the go. It doesn't it declutters your sink or cabinet and makes traveling with an electric toothbrush easier. And again, I didn't travel with it because I didn't see where to plug it in. Because I don't really
see why I said you missed your chance.
I did. I missed the chance. It asked me why I love Quip, and once again, I want to love Quip so much. But I've got to start it. When we get back home, please let me start this. Quip is backed by 20,000 dental professionals. It starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/Tony K right now, you get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/Tony K.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Nigel running a strange board, having a lot of difficulty with it.
Not surprising at all, is it?
Not surprising, not at all. I was explaining to Tommy that we have original music because it's cost prohibitive when you do a podcast to get the rights to real songs as you do all the time on radio. And people send us music from all over the country, sometimes all over the world. Who is this playing us in?
This is Homer Mars, who is a Chicago-based songwriter, and this song is called A Prayer for Julian Sands, and you might like to know that Homer is the grandson of longtime Chicago Tribune sports columnist Dave Condon.
Oh, I'm growing up.
You watch wasn't Condon on the original
on the
Chicago?
Yes, on Sports with Bill Gleason and Tellender was the young pup on that show, and yes, Nelly did, and Bill Jouse, I was taught by Bill Jouse, among others. But yes,
at Northwestern?
I read those guys growing up.
Yeah.
Every day. That's how I learned to read.
All right, so let's get into some sports. There is certainly two stories that we're going to have to talk about, I'm sure, on the PTI show today. One is the Seattle game last night where, and we have expert here on this, I don't know what else to say. Aaron Rodgers failed in that game at the end.
Yeah, I got home
to watch the fourth quarter, and Russell Wilson led Seattle down for the winning score, but Rodgers had plenty of time, and on the first series, it's so hard to use that word because he is so great, but he appeared to fail on that.
There were several things that were really odd to me. And the last drive you were talking about, I believe there's 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, and you're thinking they're down three. At the very least, they're going to kick a field goal.
That's right.
Or Aaron Rodgers is going to do what Aaron Rodgers does. And on third and short, he bounced a flat route to his running back, which, I mean, you never see Aaron Rodgers
and
do
then
that.
They kicked.
Yeah,
and
then they punted.
That's the end.
And they wasted their timeouts. They were using them like Tic Tacs. And it's, I have a problem with all NFL head coaches, regardless of how accomplished they are, none of them manage the clock or their timeouts well. And we saw that last night. Maybe some of that's on Aaron as well because he wasn't getting in and out of the huddle, and they just don't value them because they have this invincible feeling that regardless of the odds against them, they don't need timeouts because Aaron Rodgers is just going to throw it up and somebody's going to catch it. But if you watch what they were doing last night, in this day and age, when you have the Chiefs and you have the Bears and you have the Rams and you see teams that not only have talent, but their offensive-minded head coaches are scheming guys open with formation and motion. It looked last night like the Packers were just relying on Aaron Rodgers to be a sandlot quarterback to make something happen. And we saw a couple of plays where that was the case. But they looked like they were completely without a plan in crunch time.
That's exactly right. You cannot, if you're the head coach of a team, you can have the players do this. But you cannot buy into the mythology that all we have to do is hand this guy the ball right. and we're going to win. It's amazing to me. He doesn't have hardly anything around him. But what's he supposed to do?
I thought at times as well, he was, he didn't have the pocket awareness that he normally does. I thought he didn't find spots inside that pocket to slide left, to slide right, and throw the football. He looked uncomfortable. He looked like he wanted to get out of that pocket sooner rather than later. It just didn't look like a typical Aaron Rodgers performance. At the end of the day, you look at the stat sheet, and if you're a stat hawk, you probably see him throw for 330 yards and a couple of touchdowns, and you think Aaron Rodgers was great, but he set the bar to a place where I look at Aaron Rodgers last night and said, boy, that was a disappointment in the second half. And I think they gave Jones, their up-and-coming young running back, six touches in the second half. I don't know what Mike McCarthy was doing. I really don't.
How much of this could be related to, going back to something that happened in the offseason, Aaron Rodgers losing his quarterback coach and being very unhappy about it, and you wonder how much input he would have, or is he the guy who could be in Aaron's ear? I mean, even this game might have been lost on, was the Thursday night game, might have been lost on Tuesday.
Yeah, it just seems like they're out of sorts. And Aaron can't always ride in on the white horse and save everybody from, impending demise. I think the ha-ha Clinton-Dix deal was also something that gives you a little insight into what the Packers are thinking. And that's that we're going to take a longer-term approach to this. And I know it's a sport where, look at the Chicago Bears, we can go last to first. Like that. I mean, it doesn't take a lot
Redskins
of time.
Redskins and Bears.
Yes,
this year.
Absolutely. But that deal surprised me, the same way that the Golden Tate deal surprised me. Because
that Golden Tate deal made Wilbon so happy.
Well, yes, because you get him out of the NFC North, for right. sure. But ha-ha Clinton-Dix, you're going to subtract him from a young secondary because why? Because you're not going to re-sign him in the offseason? Well, what about 2018? Aaron Rodgers has got a lot of football left in him, but he's 34 years old. That deal didn't make a lot of sense to me. So I guess as you zoom out, you look at the Packers and you kind of scratch your head and you wonder whether or not some really fairly serious changes are in store for the postseason.
You had, you had two or three dinners last night, so you missed
three,
this game?
Three, yeah. I saw enough to see Russell Wilson plunge into the end zone, sitting in Tavern on Rush at that point, and the place nearly erupted.
We started at Trulux.
We started at Trulux.
And then you went to where and where?
Tavern on Rush.
How can you have three dinners?
He's Michael Wilbon.
No, it's a sort of a homecoming weekend.
It's because everybody is bringing you free food and you don't want to insult anybody by not eating what they bring you.
That's true. I didn't eat that much, actually. But I watched. Luckily, I went everywhere. There were screens. But I told you earlier, this is not – look, I pay attention to the Packers like you pay attention to the Cowboys. Living in Washington, and I used to pay that kind of attention to the Cowboys when I was covering the Redskins. But the Packers are out of sorts, and you could see it starting opening night. And you thought they were going to right themselves, and they haven't. And I told you, he got angry with me, Tom, because the day that Ha-Ha Clinton-Dix was traded by the Packers and Golden Tate was traded by the Lions, I said, it's all opening up for the Bears.
These National
two
holiday
stupid
in Chicago.
Decisions yeah. are going to affect the Bears and Vikings as much as they affect the teams that got rid of those guys. And it's all because everybody wants to be Bill Belichick now. They all think they want to be so smart. Let me show you that I can trade this guy a little too early and get some value. Garbage. You got people on your team who want to play for this season. And then those two teams are not doing it, so sign
you know why? You know why the Lions traded Golden Tate? Because they weren't going to re-sign him. And they say they're going to be active in free agency at the end of this year. So you're not going to get a compensation pick, not to get down into the weeds about all of this. But this is their thinking. We're not worried about 2018. We're not going to sign Golden Tate. Usually when a good free agent or a good player leaves via free agency, you get a compensation pick. But it's directly tied to how much you spend or what you do in free agency and purchasing. So they made a decision that the rest of the NFC North looks at and goes, congratulations.
So what I wonder about is, and again, I would put this under the heading of mythology, and it probably stems mostly from Tom Brady, but that people, coaches, look around and say, it doesn't matter what else we do, because we've got that guy at quarterback. We've got that guy. The Detroit Lions pay an enormous amount of money to Matthew Stafford, who has won exactly nothing. He's never won anything. If you take away his receipt, I mean, what is he supposed to do? I think the mindset to me is crazy. It's just crazy. Now, we can understand how it happens because, as Mike is always railing about, they've taken defense effectively out of football because of health and safety issues. But the reliance on quarterbacks, you just cannot expect him to do stuff when he doesn't have anything around him.
Well, and you look at Golden Tate, and Marvin Jones is a heck of a receiver, and Kenny Galladay, the kid, young kid from Northern Illinois here, is a fantastic player. Golden Tate's a glue guy. Now, I say that with a bit of pride in the position. If you're playing in the slot, well, you're not going to get all the headlines. You're a key component to what is going on. And I would argue to you that Golden Tate was the most important component to their passing game. And you remove him, and you've undercut what Matthew Stafford is trying to accomplish. And these guys don't play forever either. I get it if you've got a young quarterback, but you've got a quarterback in Matthew Stafford. You've given tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. You should be trying to win every single year.
Rodgers, everyone acknowledges on talent alone right now, he's the best out there. He's not, Tom Brady historically is the greatest, but Rodgers right now is the best guy. But if there's nothing there, what is he supposed to do? And you're paying him a lot of money. So
you take Aaron Rodgers off of that Packers team. We saw it last year. They were 7-9. There was something that wasn't good enough to compete in the NFC for sure.
Let me get to one other story. Draymond Green and Kevin Durant went out and they played last night together. They didn't hurt each other. The team stunk. Well, the team stunk.
Yeah, they did.
But that's the wins and losses right now are not nearly as meaningful as the overarching drama here between these two. What did you see, if anything? What do you think?
They were just a down-in-the-mouth team last night. They had nothing. And they were drained, I presume, emotionally. And the question will go – see, I think it does – the wins and losses can be affected. You know, the NBA locker room is the smallest locker room in sports. There are fewer people than any other team sport. And if you got guys that drain that room of the energy, the Golden State locker room, Tony, and I spent a lot of time in it over the last 4 years, it's a joyous place. Like after a game, it's a place you hang around. You talk, guys are there, there's camaraderie. Not only that, it extends. Like the other night when Kevin Durant walked out of the building and people said it was the first time he'd ever walked out without talking to the media, that wasn't an exaggeration. I've caught myself in the Golden State locker room an hour and a half after a game, before SportsCenter, before whatever it is I'm doing now, because there's that kind of closeness, there's that kind of byplay, there's that kind of good vibe, night after night after night, for 4 years, going into the fifth year. So now it seems like, now I don't know how temporary, it could be temporary, it could be a few days. It could be much longer than that. It could make them have to think about things they could do this season if they don't get this right. Look, they're set up, Tony, not only to win. They're building like a trillion-dollar building in San Francisco that they want all those guys to move into. And everybody says, people say stupid stuff. Oh, they're going to have a run for 6 or 7 years. No. Mm. No. Sports doesn't work that way. Life doesn't work that way anymore. Mm. And so
It comes back to me, this question that still has not been answered to my satisfaction, nor has it been asked of the right people to my satisfaction. And Tom, you, as a pro athlete, I'm sure this is your question too. Why would they publicly do that to Draymond Green? This guy is an all-star.
Yeah.
He's part of one more championship than Kevin Durant is. There are so many ways. When you say we're going to handle this internally, you didn't do that. You handled it externally. You humiliated this. Why would you do that?
Maybe to placate Kevin Durant.
You can still not have to do it publicly.
That's true. I don't. Maybe there's more noise inside that locker room than we acknowledge. Mike, you're there. When your glue guy has to be the guy that's managed, It seems a bit odd, doesn't it? I mean, glue guys don't have to be managed. You got to manage the other guys.
Well, Iguodala was that guy before Draymond Green, and he did not have to be managed.
No, he doesn't. But you know what? It'll be interesting. All these things come out in drips and drabs. I don't think there was more noise. I think that sort of what you saw was what you got. And I said the first thing, I thought it wasn't a big deal because Draymond Green and
does it all the time.
It's every night.
Yeah.
And I even call people out there and I say, why is this different? And the first answer I got, and I told him this in real time, the answer I got was because the team treated it differently. And that winds up being exactly
but let me ask you, is it because they try, you know, everyone feels KD is leaving at the end of this year. Are they trying to placate him to make sure he stays
only,
in the
That's the only
reason.
Reason
that makes sense now.
That's it, it's, this is now, to try to keep Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
But what you do is you may lose two now.
Yeah.
You could.
Because Kevin Durant, the reason LeBron James left Cleveland is because he'd already left Cleveland and then left Miami. When you leave once, you can leave 10 times. Kevin Durant is not going to be bound to that team by anything other than what Kevin Durant wants to do for Kevin Durant. He's already left Oklahoma City. Right. Not only did he leave Oklahoma City, he didn't even tell the guy he was playing with that he was leaving. He didn't even tell him that. So that tells you something about Kevin Durant. Great player, wonderful player, selfless. What a great player, but not a teammate guy. Yeah. If you now drive out two guys, what have you done to yourself?
Well, and Draymond took a team-friendly deal, didn't he, to make it possible for them to be able to fit
team-friendly
KD
deal. And this, to start this season, and I, you know, talked to Draymond Green a sizable amount.
Totally. Nice.
Draymond Green said, you know what? How's this offense going to work? I'm going to take fewer shots.
Nobody
says
that. I don't
need to shoot. I can take three shots.
Nobody says that. He said that.
And still impact the game.
And that's the guy you just humiliated publicly. We'll get out of here. We'll be back because, you know, we got segments to do. And I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser
Show. This is the Indochino ad. This is about made-to-measure suits fitting better compared to generic off-the-rack suits. Wilbon, I'm not saying that Wilbon will buy an Indochino suit. No one will believe that anyway. But Mike gets everything made. You get everything made.
No,
you
not don't. Everything.
Well, you don't. Suits.
Sometimes.
Suits. You may go to Saks and get a jacket, but you get suits made. That is the new trend, by the way. That is the new trend. Indochino way ahead of the trend. You have how many Indochino suits, Nigel?
I've got three, including the suit I wore last night to dinner.
A very nice-looking suit. You looked very Rat Packy last night. You did. You looked good. You had that open-collar white shirt. You looked carrying that scotch. You looked very Rat Packy last night.
Yes, but the Indochino suit gives me that confidence to hang out with Dino and the rest of the gang.
Who are still signing somewhere. There's a huge variety of fabrics and colors and patterns that make Indochino stylish.
Swatches, Tony.
Well, I'm just reading here. There's no longer any excuse for wearing an ill-fitting suit, especially when they're available at such great prices. Highest quality, lowest price. Indochino is North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. You have the option to personalize the details, the lapel, the lining, the pockets, the buttons. You can write your own monogram. You can do this in Cyrillic if you choose to. You visit a stylist at the showroom or you have them take your measurements personally or you measure at home yourself. You measured yourself, didn't you?
Yes, with a yardstick and a piece of rope.
Fantastic. You choose your fabric inside and out. You choose your design customizations. You submit your measurements with your choices and you relax when your suit gets professionally tailored and is mailed to you in just a couple of weeks. November is Black Friday season, meaning 2018's lowest prices. That's up to 70% off of everything. The theme is all about stepping out from backstage, as Nigel did last night, making an entrance, taking center stage, which he had until Wilbon walked in.
Well,
it's your biggest moment. It's your grand finale. This week, listeners to this high-quality podcast can avail themselves of Black Friday pricing by using the code TONYK at checkout. That's 70% off the regular price for a made-to-measure suit, plus the shipping is free. That is Indochino.com, promo code TONYK for up to 70% off. Indochino, Indochino.com. It's an incredible deal for a made-to-measure suit, and once you go custom, you don't go rack. And Eddie Murphy just echoes in my head.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Who is it?
Once again, this is a local band here in Chicago. This is Paul Cody and the Edsel Brothers, and this song is called Closing Day.
They're local here?
They're local.
Do we know where they're playing? Or?
No, we got an email from them. We played them a few times on the show.
So you can listen at the end of the podcast to this music in its entirety. And Michael, if you get on the mic and tell people out there making their own music, if they want to submit it, we're going to play it. What do they do?
Send your music to the show by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com.
And I won't ask you if we're selling anything today because we're out of our element.
Well, I hope you have your TK Show knit hat as you're strutting down Michigan Avenue with your Canada Goose jacket.
Yeah, and my pom-pom.
Yeah.
I need to have that. How do people order that?
Go to shop.tonykornheiser.com.
You wanted to talk about Tommy's radio show.
Yeah, I'm fortunate.
We're fortunate to have you weekly.
I'm fortunate to be with Tom and Mark Silverman, Waddle and Sylvie. It is a tremendous show. And there are a lot of good shows here, several good shows here in Chicago. And I have friends who are here, David Haw, the Chicago Tribune columnist, who I love as a columnist and as a friend, and does morning radio here.
Easy with all the compliments.
I know. I'm getting myself in trouble with the
competition.
But I
have a trident outside, and I'll use it on you if I have
you
to.
Will. Like Stu Gatz. That's another thing.
Yeah.
But their show is just insightful. It's fun. They are critical when they need to be, but not in that knee-jerk sort of way. It is insightful and smart, and I love listening to them, and I particularly love the opportunity to be on in my hometown. I mean, I need to say this all the time because people have to pit things against each other now, like Durant and Draymond. Washington, D.C. has been great to me. Not good, great. My whole life, my whole adult life. But like a lot of people who live in Washington, it's not my home. You know what I mean? It's not my hometown. This is my hometown. And Tommy knows, being a Midwesterner, but now living in Chicago, we're different. We're different because we resent being in New York's shadow for great, great, great many years. That is part of why Michael Jordan, the Bulls, matter. Because every year they would just beat a different Knicks coach to death. Pat Riley, Rick Pitino, Don Nelson, whoever it was. This matters. This matters. Mike Jordan's been gone from this city in terms of playing for 20 years. This matters. And so being on here matters in a way. There's a civic pride that I don't know exists many other places, if any other, to the degree that it does here. That Second City is not about – people think Second City is second to New York. It isn't. Second City is what sprung up, what necessarily after the Chicago Fire. So the second time Chicago was built, that's what Second City's for. But even Chicagoans probably feel, it has to do with New York. And so there's a kinship that is born of that. And so talking about sports here, reacting to it, reporting it, they to me do this better than anybody.
So I'll get to the show. I just wanted to mention this one thing. Growing up in New York, growing up on Long Island, suburban New York, it is an assumption. It's almost like from birth, and you don't know how it happens, but you say to yourself at some point at 14 or 15 or 16, I'm from New York. I'm better than everybody else. And that's how you actually feel. You carry that with you.
Yeah.
It's terribly arrogant if you talk about it, but it is a confidence builder because you just say, okay, this is New York. I wanted to ask you about doing radio. When I started doing radio a million years ago, I did a 3-hour show. And there was a real big difference between 3 hours and 2 hours. A real big difference. Your show is how long?
Four hours. There's a big difference between 3 and 4 is where I feel.
That is really a lot. Yeah. Do you repeat? Well, how do you – what is the choreography?
They tell us all the time your radio audience changes every 15 minutes. We come in with a plan. What we've decided to do for the most part – and thank you for the kind words, Mike – is, first of all, when I got into this business – I got into it kind of with my own self-imposed, ground rules. And one was going to be that, I was going to do it in a sincere fashion. I'll be critical when I need to be critical, but I'm not going to ever take a personal approach. And not because I feel like I'm above anything, but just because as a former player, when I sat in a locker room after a game, and if I dropped a pass on third down and a reporter came over to me or a television reporter came over and asked me a question, I was happy to respond to it. When the response would be that SOB, who's not working, if you ever take it personal or into the personal realm, you've lost me. You know, so I've always, and I'm not saying that, that's just my approach to it. I'm not going to take a personal shot at some. I'm not going to tell you somebody's a lazy SOB or this, because you just, I don't think that that's the right way to handle it. So I'm, with that said, we don't take ourselves, I don't take myself that seriously because I know I'm not the story. And I felt that way back when I was playing. I'm not the players of the story, the teams of the story, the coaches of the story. I'm not. I'm just some fortunate guy being able to sit here and talk to you about the story. So I think we've taken an interesting approach. I mean, we get emotional when we have to.
Do you take calls?
Yeah, we do.
See,
we do.
I stopped taking calls about 5 or 6 years in.
We don't take as many as we used to.
I stopped completely.
I feel personally from my own and just my own preference, I'd rather listen to a quote-unquote expert speak about a topic. Like, I like hockey. I don't think hockey starts until the postseason for me. So when the Blackhawks aren't in the postseason, they might as well not have had a season.
Right.
Because playoff hockey is when I jump in. Eddie Olchek's a good friend, and he works for our station now. When we need to talk hockey, I call Eddie. I'm not going to sit there and try to bluff my listeners that I know what the hell's going on and are they making the right changes.
I saw him on TV talk about his hair transplant. He does a hair transplant commercial.
A lot of
What's
hair.
The deal here in Chicago?
Sandberg,
if I got a job here, I would get new hair in a week.
Yeah, they give it to
me. I mean,
you.
Everybody's getting free hair.
Yeah.
Olchek got free hair. Your boy got free hair. Urlacher, one of the great-looking bald guys of
He's
all
fantastic.
Time. Why?
I tell him I tease him about that.
Well, we do. Brian joins our show and has over the last couple of years on a consistent basis. And he was wearing a hat, and we would be out in local taverns and different places doing the Brian Urlacher show. And I really never recognized that he was growing something underneath his hat. But when he revealed it, I was sitting next to him, and I said, I got to touch this. and to Brian's credit, and Brian's one of the sweetest, nicest,
absolutely
most accomplished people on the planet, but one of the nicest guys in the world. He goes, pull on it. So I took a handful of his hair and pulled on
would've
it.
Been
and it
was so great if it came
out.
In your
I
hand.
Was trying to pull his hair out to disprove
so
the process. But it was.
Well, you got to trust the process, as Wilbon
exactly,
says all the time.
It was fantastic.
So there's a story that came out last night, and Tom, as a former player, may have a different look at this. I was interested in the game only because, and I'm not interested in Tulane and Houston, but Carville had said, bet Tulane. Carville took the points on Tulane. So when I saw that it was going to come on the air, I was interested a little bit in the replay of the game. And late in the game or some point in the game, they've got a player who's good named Ed Oliver who is eligible for the draft.
Number one player in the draft.
Yeah, eligible for the draft. And he got into a dust-up with the coach, Major Applewhite, who I think was a quarterback at Texas at one point because he was wearing – he decided not to play in the game. Even though in pregame warmups he's out in the middle of the field running and jumping, literally like my dog to get a frisbee. I mean, he looks healthy, but he's not going to play. And then he puts on a jacket on the sidelines, and they got some rule. If you're not going to play, you can't wear the jacket. I mean, some rule that you go, come on, we're grown up here. What are you doing? And they were jawing back and forth, and now they had Lewis Riddick, and I like Lewis Riddick. Lewis Riddick is asked on TV, does this hurt his draft position? Is he now seen as an antagonist to coaches and this, that, and the other thing? Are you familiar with this story? Am I giving this to you blind?
I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, and it's over a rule. It's over a rule. Some rules are more important than other rules. Wearing of the jacket on the sidelines if you're not playing can't be the one to go to war over.
I have a simple litmus test for all things in sports. Is the juice worth the squeeze? Is the headache worth living through? And for me, a great example is Odell Beckham Jr. You know the positives he brings to the equation. You know the distractions that you have to deal with.
Myriad distractions.
For me.
Every day.
And this may not be a popular opinion, the juice is worth the squeeze because the talent is such that you just have to learn to deal with some of it. You hope that you can wring some of it out of the player and that maturity, he will evolve as a player. But there are certain guys that you just have to live with some of the things that drive you crazy.
So you played that position in the NFL. This is no small accomplishment. You played for a bunch of years and you were a starting receiver. Who is, if there is one, where you looked at this one guy and you said, my God, I could never, ever do, I'm awed by that guy.
Well, that was
that
every
position.
Sunday for 6 years.
Yeah, but
I played against some really accomplished players. Like, I played against Daryl Green, and Daryl was probably in his mid-30s at the time and was, you know, still a world-class athlete. And I always felt really good. I could shake Daryl at the line of scrimmage. I only played against him one time, and I'm like 5 yards down the field. I'm like, where's Daryl? He beat me to my route, and he knew what I was doing.
We see Daryl and know Daryl. I got to tell him the story.
He knew. He won't remember me because I was probably the worst receiver I ever played against. But I remember on a couple of occasions playing against the Redskins, and Daryl was across from me. I'm scared of that. I probably wet myself before the ball was snapped. And I could get off the line of scrimmage a little bit, but he could tell by what I was doing and how I was lined up, and he would beat me to my route. I played against Albert Lewis from the Chiefs, who was 6'2" and had arms. And it's like that video you see where the adult holds the kid's head and the kid's, you know, swinging his arms. I couldn't get away from him. I mean, there are Joey Browner, who was 6'3" and weighed 240 pounds as a safety. Benny Blades had me pinned at the bottom of a pile one time. And not only was I at the bottom with a bunch of guys, you know, just crushing the life out of me, Benny's got a finger in my nose and one in my mouth, like giving me a fish hook. And I'm trying to bite him. And I'm like, you know, screaming at him and trying to bite him. And he gets up and he's mad at me. And I'm like, dude, everything inside my face mask is mine. Everything on the outside of my face mask is okay. But get your hands out of my mouth. He scared the hell out of me.
Was there a receiver, though, that you looked at and you said, I could live to be 100. I can't do any of those things.
Well, I feel that, to me, and maybe I'm biased because of the position I play, Jerry Rice, to me, is the greatest football player in the history of the game. The routes, there was no wasted space. There was no wasted motion. Jerry ran, I think, a 4.6-something at the combine, which, you know,
it's not great.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
But when you put the tape on, he's running by people. I mean, smooth. Just there was something about what he did that was just... Now, I was never going to be able to do the things that he did, but I loved watching him play. I grew up in Cincinnati, so Collinsworth was a guy that I always watched. Chris Carter, I was kind of a contemporary of probably the best hands I ever saw. They were just some guys that can do some really, really cool things that it was fun to watch. There was three, I would say there's probably two guys when I played. I mean, I was always gassed because I was having to work harder than everyone else to do my job. But I played, was fortunate enough to play in the same time where Brett Favre was doing his thing with the Packers and Barry Sanders was doing his thing with the Lions. So we'd come off the field, Richard Dennehy yelling at us because we didn't do anything on offense. But we'd come over to the sidelines, and usually you'd sit down and you'd try to catch your breath and go over some things and figure out what you were doing wrong. When we play the Packers or we'd play the Lions, I'd take a knee on the sidelines, and I would watch Brett Favre, and I'd watch Barry Sanders. And it was just those are the two guys that probably stick with me most, that I remember most from my playing career and feel like, wow, I was on the same field with these guys.
That must feel like an honor.
I grew up in Cincinnati, and every time I showed up for practice, I got laughed at in high school, at college, at BC. I came to here in Chicago as an undrafted free agent, and you know, nobody thought that I was going to end up playing at any level. You know, and I'm not saying look at me. That's reality. When you go to the Indianapolis Combine and you run a 4.81 40-yard dash, and you're 175 pounds.
It's easy to ignore that person. It's
easy. I'm calling brokers at J.P. Morgan, and I'm calling Morgan Stanley connections, and I'm using my Boston College finance degree. That's the direction I'm heading. So,
all right, we will get out of here, and we will come back. Right?
Yeah, that's right. With Ogar Radio.
Ogar Radio. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So this is the Lowe's ad, and every day I do the Lowe's ad, I tell you it's my new go-to destination for Craftsman products because they have everything I need to help me tackle projects around my home, from mechanics tool sets to tool storage and more, both in store and online, and that is written for me. But the truth of the matter is that all I do is call a worker man and say, the sink is broken, please come over here, I cannot fix this at all. One of the cool and different things you will find in the Lowe's Craftsman lineup are mechanics tool sets in a gunmetal finish. Gunmetal chrome finish is corrosion resistant. That means the tools are more durable and long lasting. And the best part, if you're a stickler about cleaning your tools, it makes them easier to clean. They have this in a 51-piece and an 81-piece mechanics tool set. And it comes with the new industry-leading Craftsman 120-tooth ratchet, which offers extreme accessibility. I will not lie to you. I don't know what a ratchet is. But if one of your projects happens to be in a really tight space to get to, you definitely need to check out the 120-tooth ratchet, because it's got a 3-degree arc swing. And a 3-degree arc swing means you, or the person I have hired, can loosen or tighten bolts with less movement in those hard-to-reach spots. With its slim head and 3-degree arc swing, you can get into narrow spaces with ease and quickly tighten or loosen any fastener. Lowe's and Craftsman are both deeply rooted in heritage and quality. Like their customers, these two brands have a shared passion for hands-on doing. Lowe's and Craftsman make it easy to tackle any auto or do-it-yourself project on your list. So shop the new home of Craftsman today at Lowe's.com/Tony. That's Lowe's.com/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Old Guy Radio for the day.
Of course, we're going to play
in
Chicago.
Honor of being in Chicago, Illinois. We'll play the group that started as Chicago Transit Authority and then changed their name smartly to just Chicago. And in the 70s and 80s was one of the biggest groups in America. Is this feeling stronger every day?
That's right.
Do we have any commentary on this?
Peter Cetera says, I can remember the exact beginnings of that song. We were at the Akron Rubber Bowl in Akron, Ohio, at an outdoor gig that was delayed.
Don't say Akron around Wilbon. Don't say Akron. Wow. They beat the Wildcats.
So they delayed because of rain, and while it was raining and they were sort of waiting backstage, Jimmy Panko was played the beginnings of this song. He says, hey, what's that? He's like, nothing, I'm just fooling around. I really like that. They kept playing around with it. As second they got off tour, they went in the studio, and 5 minutes later, they had this
song.
Because
that's how rock and roll happens. Yes. Geniuses, in 10 minutes, create the greatest music you've ever heard in your life.
Yes.
All right, we are here in Chicago, much against my will, because I had to get on a plane and have to get on one going home, because of Binghamton and Northwestern. Why don't you explain how this originated, because I have absolutely no idea.
Oh, I do. I know exactly how it originated. So I came back from some board meeting, and like the trustees meet today, and I probably won't make any of the meetings, but I came back and I told you that we were going to tear down our basketball arena, which was completely inadequate. It was built in like, it looked like something from old Russia. It was just, there were no windows in the place called McGall Hall. No windows, none. It was a barn. And if whether you played there whether you were Magic Johnson or George Mikan or Allen Iverson, who didn't play there, but no matter what the era, you had this barn. And I told you we were building a new place, we're going to tear our place down. And you said, and I remember this, we're sitting on the set of
you
PTI.
Sure I said
yeah,
this?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because I never.
I've already told this story publicly, so it has to be true.
Oh, well.
To Teddy the other day, at a nice piece in a Q&A with me in the Tribune, speaking of shameless
fancy,
plugs.
Fancy. And at some point, plug your hotshot fashion magazine that you're on the cover of.
Oh, God. Yeah. Men's book. Yeah. Is that going to be a reveal later today? So you said, you know what? You know what the first game should be? I said, no. You said the first game ought to be Binghamton because you guys are going to give somebody a payday. You're going to beat somebody's brains out.
We'll take it.
And so we wanted it to be the first game. And I think it was scheduled to be, except the NCAA changed when you can start and some other things. And so Northwestern's played a couple of times there, beat American University there in a closer game than we want.
Yeah.
But you said we should do this. I mentioned it to Jim Phillips, America's best athletic director. You mentioned it to your AD. And all of a sudden, the next thing you know, people are like, yeah, this sounds like a good idea.
Sounds like a good idea to Binghamton because we will get on. We'll be on ESPN News. We're not going to be on regular ESPN. We're up the dial, but more people will watch Binghamton
than usual
than ever in the aggregate.
Can you give us a scouting report?
Cannot.
On Binghamton?
Our best player, a kid named Thomas Bruce.
You got like 8 hours to get it together.
Our best player, who's a DeMatha kid and played a little bit at DeMatha, which is to basketball what your high school molar was football.
Yeah.
He's in concussion protocol, so he can't play. He's a big kid. I think we're starting about everybody's 6'4 and under or something.
The NBA West or conference. Yep. So anyway, so that is how the game came about as far as I'm concerned. And so now we have the shiny new arena.
Nice.
But it's a nice, the real, you know, again, ESPN, whichever, you know, outlet of ESPN it's on doesn't matter as
ESPN
much to the student
News.
Body. I think I saw something that said only 353 tickets were available as of last night. So Binghamton's going to sell it out, baby. Don't you feel proud
of that?
That
would be tremendous if we sold it out.
And so we're now, us doing the color, this is insane. I've at least been to a practice and a game, and I'm going to go to shoot around today. I'm going to see Chris
Good
Collins.
Good for you.
And you're going to come too. You're
Good
coming as well.
Good for you to go to shoot around.
Go to shoot around. I'd like to actually know. I do know the players. I mean, I've been part of this. You know,
I don't know the players.
Chris
Collins. I mean, I know the names.
Chris
we have some Collins kid. One kid is pretty good.
You know, he is trying to, in some ways, not catch up because there's not competition necessarily in the building. But Northwestern football has won 10 games two of the last 3 years, and it could be three or four. Nobody ever thought. I mean, Pat Fitzgerald has done that. And so Chris Collins, we're hoping, has that same sort of buildup. And, of course, he made the tournament, which no one had ever done.
That's right.
Including the great late now Tex Winter, who coached at Northwestern when I was a student. So there's not – we're making history. We don't have it to celebrate much. And so this is going to be fun tonight.
So this is what I wonder about. And nobody loves his school any more than you love your school. You love Northwestern. You're a trustee. You'll do anything for Northwestern. Northwestern is the only private school in the Big Ten. The Big Ten is I think it's the best overall academic conference in the country. I really do. I mean, there may be one or two weak schools, and I know you would like to laugh at that one in particular in Columbus, Ohio.
Wait, I didn't say that.
I said that. but by and large, and even that, I mean, it's a really good, solid academic conference. You and I assume that Northwestern and Michigan are considered the two best. And Northwestern is now rated 15th in the country academically.
It is 9th in the country.
We're ninth? Yeah, okay, so ninth. That's
ninth,
wonderful.
Top 10. It was a big deal when U.S. News and World came out because that's been a goal of our
that's
president,
great.
Morton Shapiro.
But I wonder this. Is there any resentment towards Northwestern by other Big Ten schools because they say, who needs them? They're small. Who cares about them? They're private.
I don't feel that way. I don't feel that directed. And I go to some road trips. I don't feel that way, Tony. And I think what
you
happens—
You feel an important member of the Big Ten?
Yeah. And there are two reasons for that. One, when one of your schools, and even though we have Michigan, and Indiana's a good school, there's several. I mean, there are a lot of good schools.
Indiana's a very good school.
Yeah, it is.
Iowa, when I was in high school.
Wisconsin wasn't always
good. Wisconsin was always good. When I was in high school and college, oddly enough, and it's a long time ago, Iowa had one of the greatest writing programs in the country. If you could get in as a grad student to the University of Iowa in the writing program, this was a really, really big deal. That up and down that conference are good academic
Purdue's
schools.
Purdue's a great engineering school.
Yeah. Yeah. But only one of those schools graduates 100%. Let me try again. 100. So for years it was, you know, it was a group, and it's still a group. Notre Dame was always at, you know, 93, 95%.
Boston College.
Top There's five. A Virginia. You know, you know the schools. Cal, Stanford, obviously.
Of your athletes.
Okay, Vanderbilt. We're overall above 95%, and I believe the last couple of years football's been at 100%. We don't have a recreation major. Not to knock it, but you know we don't. And so that's one thing. Now that has become somewhere between somewhat important and really important for a conference to be able to flash that, to pop its jersey based on that, we're important. And the other thing is, as Illinois is upset because we got to this, our marketing people, I guess, were quicker. We're Chicago's Big Ten school. So they want us on. You know how many Northwestern games have you seen this year on national television?
Well, you got the 12 o'clock Eastern start all the time.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So that it matters that you have this audience a little bit more than, say, West Lafayette, Indiana, just to pick a place that's smaller or you know, even Bloomington, Indiana, wherever you want to choose in the conference, otherwise Iowa City. So I don't feel that, Tony, And now that we've, again, won 10 games, two out of the last 3 years, we've been in bowl games like, I don't know, six out of the last seven, the basketball team has gone to the tournament. And the other, the Olympic sports, the non-revs, when you have a lacrosse team that's won seven national championships.
Well, my daughter graduated from Northwestern several years ago and played soccer there, and they've taken that program. It's a top 25 program now. That building is something.
You're going
to
see the building. You're going to tour the building.
But would you say, doing sports in this city, would you say that whatever Northwestern has done, it's not Notre Dame to this city.
No.
I mean,
no.
Notre Dame is...
Yes. I would say Notre Dame still has the bigger following in this town.
Absolutely.
But what Mike says, and I mean, I echo everything you say. I have four daughters. My oldest graduated from Northwestern. I had two at Vanderbilt, and I begged them to go to Northwestern. Begged them, and they wanted to go to Nashville.
So I also, I've often wondered about this. You can take Stanford, which is, I think, the model for every combination of academic excellence and athletic excellence. I mean, Stanford is it. Stanford, Vanderbilt, Rice, Northwestern, Duke. I could get to 10. I could get to 10. Would you ever consider that that's a better conference to be in than the one that you are in now? That the sort of a smart.
There was talk of it.
Yeah.
There was talk of it for real. Television creates a lot of things. But I think you have to have the school that would not ever cooperate with that, and that would be Notre Dame. So believe me, there was talk of it. I don't know how serious it got, how far it got, because it sounded crazy. But when everybody was – when the conferences were all being jumbled, right? And you don't even
well,
know
Well, and that
who,
started with your school. Your patient BC, zero. Yeah. BC, I will use the word ruined. You may not. But BC, I believe, ruined the landscape of conferences in the United States of America.
As we knew them for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
So
they were the first to jump.
Yes.
There was talk of it. And at first when I heard it, I was like, okay, well, why would you do this? And again, television drives all things, even
a lot
now.
Of money.
So
well, there's no doubt BC did what they did strictly because of money.
Right.
There's
yeah,
no
sure.
question.
And you look at Maryland. Sure. Why did they? Maryland has no business in Big Ten. None. Zero.
That's
I,
right.
As I tell
That's
my
right.
neighbors, and I live in Maryland.
Rutgers has no business.
I say to them,
what are you doing?
We don't want you, and you should not want us. I don't want to see you come into my building, Maryland, and I live there. So anyway,
that's kind of mean spirited.
Yeah, I know, but I don't want them because they don't belong. They belong in the ACC. They belong playing Virginia and Duke and teams.
Or
that those
if there was a Big
about.
East, a viable Big East, they would belong
yeah,
in that.
But they don't belong in the Big Ten,
no,
and then we have to suffer through them, particularly now when all these things are going on. But Tony, it's a different place now. We used to have obstructionists. No one believed when I was in school that we could win five. Dennis Green once was voted Coach of the Year, record 3-8. That's what his peers thought. His yeah. peers thought, this is impossible for you to do. You won three?
Yeah.
Coach of the Year. So, and you remember, I used to write and say things about poor Rick Venturi, who, by the way, does radio and does a really great job at it. Rick, the record of the school, the football team, when I was in school, I believe this is right, is 3-41-1. You know what the one was? Scoreless tie. With Illinois, 0-0 right. on the first week of the season. And then we had a slogan there. We hired marketing people, expect the unexpected. 0-0. And Susan Anton, you remember the actress?
Sure.
Anton? I think she was involved with that campaign.
Sure.
0-0 with Illinois. 3-41-1. We won three games. And when I was in college, three. How, you know how many
That's
I
not
saw?
Even one a year.
You know how many I saw the three?
How many?
I saw one.
In 4 years?
In 4 years. So one of them was at Iowa.
That's almost as many. Like, my school doesn't play football. I was only one behind you.
And they let you be a trustee?
Yeah. Know,
you didn't even go to the games as a student.
Well, we lost at Iowa. I wasn't there. There was a game against Illinois on my birthday, so that's going to be coming up on the 40th anniversary, 1978. Illinois is up 14-0. It's like 12 degrees. And I just go, you know what? I'm done. I hop in a car. I go to my parents' house on the south side for a birthday dinner. In the car, on the radio, we score three touchdowns, mm-hmm. win the game. So I didn't see that. And the other game we won was against Wyoming, who was refurbishing its home stadium and played 11 road games that year. Those are
That's
the
all.
Three. 27-22. I remember the score. I saw one of them.
All right. We'll get out of here.
Binghamton, not much worse than that, right? And they, by the way, they hate now.
Binghamton,
when
we are undefeated since 1946.
Is that when you get rid of your team?
No, that's when our school was founded and we've never had a team. And on that note, we will come back with, do we have some emails? Do we have any emails and a jingle when we return? I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show. Monday, it starts with Mike Wilbon screaming about I-95. Is Adam Silver still alive? Coffee now with Dinah, Ernie Banks and Ditka, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan, Michael Jordan, 42 of IS, high school soccer, name dropping Urban, three Stanley Cups, idiotic combines, all garbage, knuckleheads. He's the king of Chicago, he's Wilbon, he's the king of Chicago. Chicago, he's still alive.
from Larry Dembinski in Mililani, Hawaii. That's I was great. A knucklehead before discovering Littledom, so this is my tribute to Wilbon. I tease because I love. All my thanks go out to the great Joe Arrow for his encouragement and advice on this rookie's attempt at a jingle. Conversely, everyone's blame and scorn should go out to the great Joe Arrow for his encouragement and advice on a rookie's attempt at a jingle. Isn't that nice?
That was tremendous.
Let me thank Wilbon. Let me thank Tom Waddle. This is very sweet to come in here and waste an hour with me. Let me thank the sponsors, Lowe's, Quip, and Indochino. Let me thank 670 The Score for letting us do the thing here, and let me also plug 1000 ESPN,
yes,
the great rival. Yes. So I just want to make sure everybody's happy.
And also thanks to Mitch Rosen and Shane Rorden, who are Shane helped us get set up in here. Thanks, guys.
Lowe's, Quip, and Indochino, thank you. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From John Stadola, Gonzaga class of 65, Notre Dame class of 69. The Skins have won 6 games and are now bowl eligible. Can they beat Alabama? I don't know.
Probably not.
Bill Keister from Kensington, Maryland. I know you were an English major and you were a doctor of humane letters, but I assume even you have the mathematical ability to see through the ridiculous email you read yesterday stating that if you take the year of your birth and add your age, it equals 2018. Guess what? Next year, if you take the year of your birth and add your age, it will equal 2019. Given how many brilliant emails of mine have been turned away by the viscous gatekeepers, I resent that this dribble made it past the gate and into my ears at the end of my lunch today. That email is the mailbag equivalent of listening to a Chris Saliza, Luke Russert show on a constant loop while the Hallmark Channel is playing in the background. Perhaps that is a slight overreaction. Nothing is that bad. From Steve the Sycophant, as you rollick with Mr. Mike through Chicago, please have him help resolve a pronunciation problem. When you read an email of mine with the word fall foliage, I found your pronunciation of foliage different than mine. I say foliage when you say foliage. Online dictionaries support you, but I've been saying foliage all my life. Check with Mr. Wilbon on this pronunciation, as maybe we people from the heartland have it right.
I'm a foliage guy.
Foliage, not foliage. Yeah, yeah. I'm a verbiage guy, not a verbiage guy.
Verbiage.
So maybe
I'm confused.
There you go. From Mark Larson in Salt Lake City, Utah. My Walmart receipt the other day had a total of $161.61. My heart leapt with an instant thrill. I really need to get a life. From Mark Corrier in Ellicott City, Maryland. It was nice to hear on yesterday's podcast that Binghamton will be playing Notre Dame in basketball in the next few weeks. It's not Notre Dame. What happens at Chatter, a Notre Dame bar, the night of that game? Notre Dame would never. They won't know. It's Northwestern.
Well, we know that, but don't say Notre Dame would never play Binghamton. Of course they would.
Would they give us money? We would play there.
That's the whole idea.
If they give us money. Michael Nuttall from Cincinnati, Ohio. In response to Scott Ferguson's email from Wednesday's show, he mentioned Chuck Todd's Wikipedia page. I am the one who updated the page for Chuck. I did so last year when Chuck started picking for the podcast and checked back many times, assuming it would be taken down. But apparently Wikipedia finds, quote, pitted against a monkey, unquote, a legitimate thing and has left it there. Although I now see the error of my ways, including it in other professional ventures. As we all know, Chuck wouldn't put his own money on most of these picks that he makes anyway. And we all know you can't make money without spending money. Maybe I will include it in other hobbies and interests. Either way, I like to think that despite not having the creativity or musical talent for jingles, this is my little way of helping the show. At the risk of channeling Mike from Burke, Virginia, I wanted to congratulate you on your AL Cy Young pick of obviously not Chris Sale, not to mention the other pitchers you suggested, Verlander and Kluber, none of whom was named Blake Snell. Snell, of course, could easily be overlooked with his 189 ERA. That's really good. 189, a whip, a 974, and a record of 21-5. I'm going to confess to the big city prejudice in that one. Did you see that coming? Did you see Snell come?
I thought he was.
They're the surprise of all baseball.
I thought he was as worthy. You know, it's interesting.
Do you know how many games Tampa won? They won 90.
90 games.
They won 90. I can't name anyone on the team. They won 90. Now, that's an I-95 card of prejudice, although I-95 far closer to Tampa than not to Tampa. Far closer.
Not that close.
From Nick Owsley in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We recently learned about a 69-year-old Dutchman who wants to legally change his age to 49.
Yes.
Then a little writes in about a nasal flu vaccine only being available for people between the ages of 2 and 49. So maybe that Dutchman isn't so crazy after all. He just wants one legal hit of the nasal vaccine before it's time to go. Wouldn't be on my bucket list, but to each his own. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear what?
If I wish one of your guys had children, if I could kick them in the head or stomp on their testicles for you could feel my pain, because that's the pain I have waking up every day.
You came on the scene in a room with a view. The film world held great promises for you. Saw such glamour in your blonde hair, your frightening eyes, their penetrating stare, that dippy glare. This is my prayer for you. This is my prayer to you. This is my prayer for you. Julian Sands. In 87, he moved to the States, a British lad on his way to being great, chasing big screen fate. Did you want more killing fields or action flicks with massive audience appeal? What would define your reel? Well, Hollywood gave you Warlock and other B-film leads and sinister supporting roles. Did you compromise your dream? Julian Sands. Better than boxing hell, another TV adaptation of Stargate. Better than Vibes, do you want more than season 5 of 24? Better than the punchline. Just feel fortunate that we even know your name. Inside us all is an evil man with gorgeous looks and a hypnotizing tan, doing the best he can. Our Father, please bless him and what he represents. The artist who gets sort of far and never quite relents. Bless persistence, bless acceptance, bless the almost ones. Bless the ones turned into jokes who still up, like Julian Sands. About you.
but I think I'll be the last to leave. Things are changing. That don't sit right with me. If there's a problem, I'll do my best to fix it. But if not, I'll just let it be. Cause change ain't always I'll be the last.